Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we are talking about multicolor decks that are good in every deck that you can possibly run them in. And we got this small crew this week. Krim couldn't make it this week, but we're joined by Phil, Brewer's Kitchen. What's up, Phil? How's it going today?
Heyo, pretty cool list of cards that I would love to play, but I'm usually not in the colors.
Yeah, I know. There's some cards in here that I feel like would be staples if they were monocolored cards. Like, you see them in so many decks, but it's really just their colors that keep them from showing up that often. But Tomer, we also have you here today. How's it going?
I'm fighting off a flu or something.
Ugh,
but
I'm
here physically and mentally a little bit. And I like multicolor cards. I like them. So
I like multicolor cards too. And we got some good ones to talk about today. But before we get into that, we also have a couple sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put a pack in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more. It pays just a 5% service fee, and if you want to do a bit of work, you can use a sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed, and you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about cards that overshadow the rest of your deck, and our top comment comes from @LazyDino59, says, alternate title, The Goldfish Crew Learns About Game Changers. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, I think they're actually kind of right. A lot of the cards we did bring up are on the Game Changers list, to some extent at least. So
yeah, and then some weren't. Like Deadpool, I think, is not.
Should be, though.
Felt like the Goldfish does a mutual intervention on each other.
Yeah, it really did. Anyway. Thank you for your comments. Send in more for this episode, and maybe you'll be the comment of the week. But let's talk about multicolor cards that you should play in every deck. And Phil, you kind of pitched this idea, so let's start with you this week. What's a multicolor card that goes in every deck?
Okay, so that's, I rarely get to play this, but if I do, I love it. And it's Lothal Corrupt Sheriff. Is that how you... I thought it was Sheriff, but it's with two I. Mm.
I think that's weird Lord of the Rings spelling for some reason.
Sheriff.
Yeah, it is Orzhov, and I'm usually not in Orzhov. Well, if I am, I'm usually a token deck and I play it. But so it's a 2-drop, that's a 2/1, and whenever a player casts their second spell each turn, you lose 1 life and create a treasure token. So I love cards that trigger off the opponent doing stuff. It's kind of like... It makes other turns not as boring if you gotta watch them and see if you can get some value from them doing something. And then if you play this on turn 2 or like turn 4, like as your second or as your first of second 2 spells, you usually get mad value pretty quickly. I don't know. I played it a lot when I get the chance. And it's usually like 1.5 treasures each turn cycle that's not you, and you can play, so it's usually always one, especially in black white. You usually play weenies, small creatures. I just like it, and it might kill you very slowly, but in a good way.
It's really good, right? Like, because it triggers off your second spell too, you do have like some control over it. So the baseline, like you said, should be you get at least one treasure each turn. And then hopefully some of your opponents are double spelling. And really, on a 2-drop creature, how many treasures do you need to make each turn for it to be worth it? Like, you're in Orzhov, you don't
each
get actual mana
one.
Dorks. Like, even if you're making one each turn, you built yourself the equivalent of a mana dork, right? And you get the upside of their treasure so you can store them up or whatever. And then sometimes you get more than one. So I think this card's great. It's also like CDH staple, right? I think.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
Is it?
Oh my god, it's $8. Well,
yeah,
I bought
$8.
A bunch of them and they all got very wet when I got
flooded.
Well,
the great flood.
At least it was a good call to buy. But oh my god, they just kept Rising. Whatever.
Yeah, it's a good card.
It is. It does also trigger Caretaker's Talent in the opponent's turns. I know.
Of course it does.
Okay.
But in the opponent's turn, it's not too easy, right? Unless he plays Mono of the Ruined Tide. But
yeah. Hard mode.
I don't think I'd run it outside of three color decks. Like, I think three is my cap. Because it's something you want to definitely cast on turn two if you have the chance. And I think maybe in like a five color deck, it might be hard to cast it consistently. I don't know. Unless you have like the perfect mana base, I guess. All the fetches, all the shucks. Yeah. And all the triumphs.
And even if you got all the fetches and the shocks, do you want to fetch in a way that gets you turn two Lotho every time? Not necessarily. Probably. But I think I agree with you that like 2-3 color decks, I think it's great. Once I get to 4 or 5 color, then I'm kind of like, I don't know if I play it every time, but I think it is a really powerful card.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to the next one. Tomer, what's a multicolor card you should play in every deck?
All right, I'm cheating a little because we all talked about the cycle. And I think this is a cycle that, if I'm in the three color pairing that I can run on these, I'm usually running it. So I'm talking about the new Ultimatum cycle, which is from Ikoria, I believe. There was an original one from Alara, but we're talking about the newer one, which is just generally better. Eerie Ultimatum, Emergent Ultimatum, Genesis Ultimatum, Ruinous Ultimatum. Is there another one?
Inspired is the last one. That's kind of the bad one. It's still okay,
one?
But
Inspired
is the Jeskai one. Yeah,
we don't count that one. It's a four card cycle actually on this one. So the Eerie Ultimatum is the Abzan one. So white, black, and green, and you return any number of permanents with different names from your graveyard to the battlefield, which in Singleton means basically everything except additional basics. Emergent Ultimatum is Sultai. Search your library for up to 3 monocolor cards with different names and exile them. An opponent chooses one of those cards, shuffle that card into your library, and then you get to cast the other two for free. That's kind of ridiculous. Genesis Ultimatum is Teemer. Let the top 5 cards of your library put any number of permanent cards from among them onto the battlefield and the rest into your hand. And then Ruinous Ultimatum is the Mardu one. Destroy all non-land permanents your opponents control. They're all 7 mana, sorceries, all very pip-heavy. I think the one that I run the most is like Ruinous Ultimatum, and I won't think about it because it's just like it's a one-sided board wipe and every single deck wants that. And then like Eerie Ultimatum's probably the one that probably has the highest upside. You have to like just not be Spellslinger. And I mean, that's pretty much every single Abzan deck at that point. And then it's already insane value, one of the best recursion spells in the game. And then the other two, I think Emergent Ultimatum, when there's like your heavy bomb heavy. Like if you have like a couple big spells, then it's already very good. And then Genesis Ultimatum I actually don't run. But I want to hear your thoughts on these.
Funnily enough, I play Genesis Ultimatum in both the decks where I can, but they're both like landfall-ish big stuff decks.
Okay,
so it's usually landfall triggers and big stuff. Emergent Ultimatum, I mean, I talked about it last episode. I just assume you're going to kill me if you cast it, and if not, it's a root, so I don't play this. And then Eerie Ultimatum and Ruinous Ultimatum, if you're in the colors, that is, you gotta do it. It's Ruinous Ultimatum is so brutal. It's an I win button, I think, if nobody dodges the Wrath.
It's the Mardu Cyclonic Rift.
I mostly am with you guys on these. Like, Ruinous Ultimatum, every deck that's Mardu up to 5 colors, I play it. Eerie Ultimatum, same thing, Abzan up to 5 colors, with very limited exceptions. Like Tomer said, if you're a Spellslinger deck and you're not playing permanents, it's not good. But really, if you get back 2 or 3 things, you're getting good value. And sometimes you're getting back like 20 things and just winning the game on the spot. So I think it's worth it. Emergent Ultimatum, I actually don't play. Not because I don't think it's good enough, because I actually think it's too good in anticlimactic. Like, if I play Emergent Ultimatum, it's very easy just to add 3 cards into my deck that essentially say I win the game when I cast this. Like, Omniscience with Planeswalkers and a way to double the Planeswalkers. Like, there's packages that we see in constructed formats, like 1v1 formats, where people have just figured out, like, if you play these cards and cast Emergent Ultimatum, you pretty much just win the game. So I mostly don't play it because of that. I think if you have the restraint and you're like, I'm not going to build around it at all, and I'm just going to get my 3 best things and not think about trying to win with it, then I guess it's probably fine. But I think it's actually a little bit too strong. And then Genesis Ultimatum, It's okay. The main issue I have with Genesis Ultimate, I think it's good, but there's just so much good burst card draw in green when you cast like Lash Marts of the Ents and stuff like that, that I'm kind of like, do I need Genesis Ultimatum? Like, is it even worth it? Is it better than those other options? So that's the one I guess I'm probably most sus on. How much do you play? How have you found Genesis Ultimatum, Phil? You said you played in a couple of decks, right?
I mean, I played in Omnath, which is 4-color landfall. And I have, like, Noric Deluge, where you can just, whatever.
Oh, and does it exile itself?
It does exile. Right. So it doesn't go into your graveyard, but it happened that I cast three copies of it. And then the other one is Maelstrom Wanderer, which is, like, a chaos random deck, so it fits the theme, right? It also triggers a bunch of landfall and gives you...
Do you also run Genesis Wave? I feel like that's like the closest analog because both of them are putting permanents directly onto the battlefield from the library, from the top
Genesis
of the library.
Genesis Wave, I play in Necrobloom for landfall, but I can't do it in Cascade and then in Omnath. I don't, even though it would probably be good.
I got a shout out. I know we said we're talking about the new ones, but I do got to shout out one of the old ones. Well, two of them kind of. So first, I got to mention Cruel Ultimatum just for Krim's sake. He couldn't be here today, but I know if Krim was here, this would be like the number one card on his list of multicolor cards to play in every deck. Not actually formatted for Commander, which is kind of the problem with all the Shards of Alara ones. They were printed before Commander was actually like a format. So it's kind of formatted for 1v1 where you just like wreck one opponent by making them like lose life and sack stuff and discard all their cards and you draw a bunch of cards. But the one that actually sees a lot of play on EDH Rec from the old cycle, and I'm curious what you guys think about this one, Titanic Ultimatum. This is a Nia Ultimatum. Oh. Still 7 mana, sorcery speed, until end of turn creatures you control get +5/+5, first strike, lifelink, and trample. So kind of like a really expensive, super pip-heavy overrun, but you also gain a bunch of life if you don't win the game. Is this worth playing in 2025, or is I just know this is like one of the highest ranked ultimatums on EDH Rec. If you just look at play rates, is it actually worth playing in 2025, or do we just have better options now?
It's a sorcery.
It is a sorcery, but so is Crater Hoof. So is Overrun or whatever Overrun effect. Most of them are sorceries.
No, Crater Hoof is a creature.
Well, but you got to play it at sorcery speed. It's not an instant. Like, you can't flash in your Crater Hoof. That's what I was kind of reading.
I mean, it's just a Crater Hoof is when you're in green, you want to be able to tutor up creatures because green is really good at that.
The life gain doesn't swing it. Like, the life gain, that's the one part that makes me like, otherwise, I'd just be like, I just play literal overrun over this. Like, why would I spend more mana on all the pips when I can just overrun or overwhelming stampede or whatever? But the life gain's like kind of intriguing to me.
Yeah,
but like Crater, I've never seen somebody play Crater Hoof and not kill the entire table. I don't know why the life gain would be relevant.
I guess that's true. If you're just, it's kind of the argument we had about Chroma's Will a couple weeks ago when we were talking about life gain. It was like, yeah, it gains life, but if you actually just kill everyone, like, does that life actually matter? So yeah, I guess it might be the same situation. Any other thoughts on the ultimatums before we move on to another card?
They're good. I run them a lot. I try to be like as synergy focused as possible. So some of these I just don't run because I'm like, I want to be more on theme or whatever. But like,
I mean, that's true.
If I'm in Mardu, Ruinous Ultimatum, I need interaction. And,
right, you're going to play a Wrath, right, of some kind. And we haven't gotten to the point yet where there's like five different Wraths for each theme or whatever. So you're probably going to play some like generic Wrath. So they still make the cut a lot of times. Maybe 10 years from now, maybe everything will be thematic, but 5 years, All right, let's move on to my first pick. And as soon as I heard about this theme, I was like, I know the card that I'm going to talk about because I've said this before that I feel like this card is absurd. And the only reason I don't play it all the time is really just its colors, and that's Flotsam and Jetsam. So Flotsam and Jetsam, it's really two cards in one. The Flotsam side is 2 mana, 1 in a Simic hybrid, to mill 3 cards and investigate, make a clue token. Not all that exciting. The Jetsam side, though, this one's really good. It's 4 in double Dimir hybrid. It says each opponent mills 3 cards, then you may cast a spell from each opponent's graveyard without paying its mana cost. If a spell cast this way would be put in the graveyard, exile it instead. Notice that just says a spell. There's no like restriction on like instant spell, sorcery spell. You just cast a friggin' spell for 6 mana. And in Commander, you have 3 opponents. So for six mana, you mill a total of 9 cards from your opponents and then cast up to 3 spells for free, which is just absolutely ridiculous. It's, again, it's not even from the cards that you milled. It's anything in the graveyard. So I feel like that card is really strong. And the only reason I don't play it in a ton of decks is really because it's three colors. Like, the Flotsam side even kind of messes it up. You can't even play into Mirror. You have to specifically be Sultai up to five colors. I do think it's worth playing in every Sultai deck. I don't know about five colors. I haven't really played it too much in five color decks. I play it sometimes. I think it would probably still be fine there. But what do you guys think of Flotsam and Jetsam?
It's the 15-cent version of Breach the Multiverse.
It really is, yeah.
Maybe it's not quite Breach because it doesn't hit yourself and it doesn't mill as much. But, like, whatever. It's also six mana as opposed to seven. It's
and
so good. I think it would actually
creatures too. This even gets like gets you can creatures. Get a spell, a wrath, an omniscience.
Yeah, like, the fact that this gets creatures and spells, you almost can't miss with this. Like, statistically, you should find spells in the top three. And then if you're
it's from the entire graveyard.
Yeah. If you're in a mill deck, it's crazy.
I think this card is like, I think this card would actually see way more play if it was literally not even had Flotsam on it. If it was just Jetsam and they printed it as a Dimir card and no other changes, they just cut off the Flotsam part, I feel like it would actually see a lot more play. But unfortunately...
I might try that in actually. I wonder if I could get away with just cutting it in half and putting the little mini card
Dimir
in my
decks.
Sleeve and putting it in Dimir decks. Yeah.
Yeah. I think also a lot of people just don't know about this card too. Mm-hmm. Like, even of the Sultai decks, there's not enough people running it just because it's too much. It's a split card. It's
an
weird.
Uncommon from Murders of Card of Mana. So,
and it's two cards in one. They cheated that. Over here.
And the Flotsam side legit sucks. I've never cast a flot. Like, you have to be super in a very niche scenario. I guess it's got to be like early in the game and you're missing land drops and you're just desperate for any way to see another card and you mill and crack the clue. But really, you do play it just for the Jetsam side. But it is really strong. If you haven't tried it, you should play it, because every time I've cast it, I've been very happy with the results on that one. All right, Phil, back to you. What's another multicolor card people should play?
All right, one card big news, I like to play it. It is Doppelgang. It is Simic and XXX. And for each of X target permanents, create X tokens that are copies of that permanent. We do see it a lot. So also, I am in Simic a lot. Seth also plays it in every deck that plays Simic. And I think we all found out that it's good no matter if you're rampant or something. If you're at like seven... Wait, when does it... I guess for eight mana, you copy two things. And then it's already, if you look at any board state when somebody has eight mana, it's just crazy. And then once it's X4 or something, you just have an overwhelming board. And it's so fun.
it is
such a fun card.
Are you skeptical, Tomer?
I don't think it's good. I've never played this card.
Really? Whoa. You don't think it's good or you don't like
eight
it?
Eight mana, and then you copy two things?
Green.
You do copy them twice, so you get four total things.
Oh, yes.
So, like,
yeah,
you copy
okay,
two things two times each.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm allergic to big ramps. And
you can go mana positive with this super
easy. Yeah, you get four copies of two things. Like, four copies total, two things. Yeah, it's fine.
There are definitely ways where you just, like, can keep copying. You get Eternal Witness effects and, like, a ton of mana, and you end up going mana positive, and you just, can play through your whole deck. I will say, I love this card. It might be my favorite card printed last year, actually. Like, I really love Doppelgate. But I will say, I don't think I play in every Simic deck. I can envision Simic decks where I wouldn't play this. Like, Tomer's Edric deck comes to mind, where you're just, like, super low to the ground. You're kind of doing Richard's Birds thing. So I think there are some Simic decks where I still wouldn't play this card. But most Simic decks are doing the big mana, rampy, like, generate the value thing. And in any of those decks, not only do I play Doppelgang, but it is the card that I want to draw most in, like, the mid to late game. It is just so, so incredibly busted in those decks.
I mean, I don't play it in Cascades, but otherwise...
Yeah, sure.
Also, I don't play it in Lonus, although I should because
Phil.
I can make insane mana with Urza, and then...
You enjoyed cascading into X spells, Phil.
That
is my impression of Phil cascading, is he just always hits an X spell.
If there's any deck that I could actually run it in this in Simic, I just don't have a lot of Simic-based decks.
Yeah.
So I think the answer is no, but I think it is a very cool card. It's just not for me. It's not my playstyle, you know, like
What about Rite of Replication, Tomer? Were you ever a Rite of Replication believer back in the day? Okay.
Because I play mono blue, and I think it's good in mono blue. I mean, it's good in like Simic as well. Like, it's just like the proto Doppelgang, really. I can appreciate this card.
Doppelgang's awesome.
Play I misread it. Yeah.
It's oh, yeah. If you only got one copy of each thing, it sucks.
Yeah. But, two copies of 8 mana. I'm like, aren't there better things you can cast for 8 mana?
3 copies of 3 things, and then 14 or 4 copies of 4 things, and it just gets insane. But
that's strong.
Tomer, why don't you give us a multicolor card that you do want to play in every deck?
All right. This one actually also goes into every single deck. I'm very like, when I try to build, I try to stay very thematic on everything. So you would think I would only run this in tokens decks or something like that. But no, I like this card so much that anytime I'm in Orzhov, I run Ink Shields.
Oh,
Ink Shields,
no.
5 mana, Orzhov instant, prevents all combat damage that would be dealt to you this turn. For each one damage prevented this way, create a 2/1 white and black Inkling creature token with flying. Anytime I'm in Orzhov or 3-color Orzhov, this goes into the deck. It's the first card. And like, it's just like, yeah, it's generic or whatever. That's usually not what I do. And I know you guys are rolling your eyes.
Let me.
Because Krim's not here
still
to defend me.
Still haven't seen it on Clash.
Still haven't seen
Even
it on Clash.
I played it as a commander.
Yeah, but that's the worst place to put it. You don't put a fog in
true. No one's going to attack you. Tomer, how many times, so you put it in every deck, how many times have you gotten people with it? Because that's a problem I have with Ink Shield. Is just, we've talked about this in the past, just like so much mana to be leaving up. Does it actually in practice work out? Because I just don't put it in my deck, so I never really try.
It's kind of like, it's a card that you will try to play only late game, right? Like once you're in the late game and anybody can kind of win out of nowhere, I'm talking like turns 8 and beyond, where like, tapping out is very scary. You know, you want to hold up. If you have T-Pro, you're holding up T-Pro. You're holding up that 3 mana because you know somebody's going to Alpha Strike, somebody's going to go for the win or something like that. That's when Ink Shield is usable. It's not usable early to mid, and you wouldn't want to use it. But then late game, if anybody swings at you for like just like 6 damage, you could not only prevent it, but like more importantly, you put 12 flying power on the board instantly, and then your opponents have to respond. And 6 is like the low ball. Like usually if like we're talking late game, somebody's swinging at you for like an Alpha Strike or like that, and then you have just lethal on everybody if you get to untap with it. So relatively small sample size. I've probably cast like maybe 10 Ink Shields in my entire life.
Whoa,
because I don't play Orzhov that much. I have it in a single deck right now in my Selenia deck because it's my only Orzhov based deck. Maybe in the 10 times, it's maybe killed everybody like 7 times. And the other times are usually people have to, somebody has a scramble and board wipe. Either the person who attacked me for lethal now has to board wipe his entire board to stop it, or like it's somebody else's turn before mine and they board wipe me or something like that. But yeah, it usually just kills people.
I might have to try it more.
I might have to just jam Orzhov in every single commander clash until I finally see this card in my hands.
The thing that's making me like sort of think now that I would try it is just like, I feel like I've gotten pretty good at getting lots of lands on the battlefield in Commander, like just ramping aggressively. And the more mana you have access to, the easier it is to like leave up 5 mana in the late game. And I do agree the upside is immense, right? It is like a finisher in some sense. I just worry it's going to get stuck in my hand, but we might have to try some more Ink Shielding.
It's T-Pro. Well, it's not T-Pro. It's more like a fog. Like, if you are okay running fog,
I like
typically,
fogs.
In late game, that's the only time you want to cast it. And 5 mana, yeah, it's a lot, but sometimes you
I
just
like
don't want to die and you want to win.
But this one.
Spider Fog's also sick, actually. Arachnogenesis is a true shout out to that.
All right, let's move on to another pick of mine. And this is a card kind of like Tomer's, where I don't play this card that much just because I don't play the color combination that much. But if I do play the color combination, it's one of the first cards I add to my deck. And that card is Invert Polarity. So Invert Polarity, it's an Izzet card. It's double blue and a red for an instant. It's a 3 mana counter spell, but it says choose target spell. Then you flip a coin. If you win the flip, you gain control of that spell and you can choose new targets for it. If you lose the flip, you counter that spell. So the way this works in practice is, worst case, it's a 3 mana counter spell, which isn't great, right? That's a cancel. You want to play canceling commander. But 50% of the time, you just get the thing that you're countering instead of countering it, which is ridiculous. ridiculous. Any of these big bombs we've been talking about, these big finishers, you actually just get them. And it works with permanents too. Like, you gain control of the permanent, the creature, and you get it on your side of the battlefield. So even though it's a little bit lacking in efficiency for a counterspell, I think it fits the flavor of Visit really well, with just like this chaotic sort of spell slingy thing. And it's a really powerful effect. And it leads to a fun moment at the table where everyone's going to be holding their breath to see how does the coin flip go, because it really could determine the outcome of the game. So I think it's worth playing in like every Is It deck. And it usually is thematic because it's so spell slingery. I don't know about five color if I'd actually play it in five color most times, just because there's so many options in five color. But I think this is a multicolor card you should play in like every Is It deck. But what do you guys think of Invert Polarity?
I wish I played this card more. I got a extended art. I actually opened it from a booster and pulled it aside for my Clash collection. And then I either forget about it, and honestly, I'm not playing too many Is It decks.
That's like, my problem.
It's like Orzhov. It just doesn't really show up with each other. Like, I do play a lot of blue. Well, actually, I just very rarely play red. I think that's the problem. And then I forget about the card if I'm four color or something.
I think of you as an Is It Mage Tomer. I think of you in your Niv-Mizzets and Spellslinger. What do you think about this card as an Is It player? Are you a fan?
This card is the truth. This card is really good. Like, I think it's best, like, if you're playing three mana counter spells, typically you want to be playing kind of like a Drago style. Like, you're holding up mana for your big scores and counter spells and whatnot, and card draw at instant speed and stuff. And then if you're in Drago, and your Is It, this is like peak. This is peak magic. It's like legitimately really good. Like, okay, three mana cancels, not the best, but like 50% of the time you just steal that card. They don't get it. You get it in the stone. And it's any spell.
Any spell.
Oh my god.
It's crazy.
God.
It's so
good.
Be
their commander. You could just steal their commander. It's funny.
Yeah. And it's like pretty cheap for what it does, because I remember when I first started playing like Spelljack and like some of these old school like steal your stuff counter spells, but they're like five. What's a Desertion? Is that the like super old one that's five mana? Spelljack six mana. Like, this is just such a like the worst case scenario, so much better for this card. When it is just a like counter your spell at three mana, you're like, okay, whatever. And then when you get their thing, it's like the most busted card in your deck.
Yeah, obviously better in coin flip decks, but like, I don't think that's necessary. Like, you could just jam it in any deck that can hold up three mana every single turn.
Now, let's go back to Phil. Phil, what's another multicolor card?
All right. This card I have very good experiences with. Pretty much every time I cast it, I win next round, and that is Taunt from the Rampart.
Oh, yeah.
It is three mana and Boros, so five mana. Sorcery, goad all creatures your opponents control until your next turn those creatures can block. So you cast this and then you pass. Actually, you can swing in. First of all, you swing in because nothing can block. And then everybody has to attack somebody else than you and they can block. So it's like a insurrection for five mana split around the turns. And I think 99% of the times I cast it, it ends up being like me and another player ends up, that's just how it is. Like, it's usually a 1v1 after this, and then they got hit pretty hard. You can, it's just, it plays so, so well. But it's Boros, which...
I've lost 100% of the times that you've cast this against me. Yeah. If you're, like, the Boros tokens, the guy who poops out 4/4s, I forget his name, General Ferris Rockerick. I think you've cast it twice, and I lost both games.
Yeah.
Immediately afterwards. This card is the truth. It's very, very strong.
I haven't played with this card in specific much, but I have a Go deck. It's Furkrag, so it's Is It, so I can't play this card. Furkrag. And there's a card called, I think it's Spectacular Showdown, where you can like goad the table and give everything double strike. And it kind of reminds me of that card. And I've seen Spectacular Showdown in my Go deck time and time again. Do the same thing where you just goad everyone, make everyone attack each other, and people are either dead or they're super low on life. And I feel like this card should do the same thing, even though I haven't actually cast it yet. I wonder if the goad is like the reason that people don't play it more often. Because sometimes when I see a card that says goad, I think, oh, that goes in like a dedicated goad deck. But I don't think Taunt the Rampart has to go in a goad deck, right? I think you could just play this in a random Boros deck or a random even five color deck if you really wanted to. And it's still going to do its thing, even if it's the only goad card in your deck.
I think just in any aggro deck, like sometimes the board gets gummed up and you're not able to full swing. And this not only does it remove all the blockers, but it also makes sure that you can't just, like, you don't have to worry about holding up your own blockers. You're not worried about the crackback. Like, yes, somebody could play like a big hasty creature and take you out, but like everything on the board is not going at you, which is the main important thing. And it removes all the blockers. So like I put it in my equipment deck for a very long time when it was Boros equipment for my Cauldra deck. And every single time I cast it, it was like basically the game ender for me. Like sometimes my swords have protection from colors, but if they have a bunch of like colorless things on the battlefield and I can't attack, boom, top from the ramparts. Now I can. Take somebody out, everybody else kills each other, and then I mop them up afterwards too. It's really good. Also, this is one of the first cards I got accused of spiking back in the day when it was preview. Like we talked about it on the podcast, it was like for Lord of the Rings, and then like it spiked up a couple of dollars, and then I got like MTG Finance was like saying, "Oh, let's hope you spiked this card."
I mean, you've seen the red MDFC that destroys the land and then they can't block with non-flyers. You've seen this effect alone kill people, and this one is so much extra. You can Alpha Strike and then lean back and then do some beta striking. Like people do they do have to strike, but you can do the big one and then people can finish each other off.
We don't have enough beta strikes in Magic. That's rare, yeah. Oh, that is a good choice. All right, let's move on to our next pick. What do we got next?
I got one for you. This is an old school card, but every single time I'm in Teemer, I am usually running this card because it always makes me smile. It's Guided Passage. And when I say old school, I'm talking about a card that was printed in 2001. So it's actually it's legal in my pre-modern deck. Anyway, it's Guided Passage. It's green, blue, red. So Teemer, 3-mana Teemer, it's sorcery. Reveal the cards in your library. An opponent chooses from among them a creature card, a land card, and a non-creature, non-land card. Put the chosen cards into your hand, then shuffle. So the bar for this is like the minimum value you're getting for it is essentially Painful Truce. You're drawing 3 cards. Obviously, your opponents are going to try and give you, if you're the arch enemy or something and nobody wants to be your friend, your opponents are going to try their best to give you the worst cards in your deck, but you're still getting 3 and they don't know what's in your hand. And obviously you're not putting bad cards in your deck, right? So any 3 cards is usually good. They can't give you like 3 basics. They can only give you 1 land and then 2 non-land. So it's like, I think it's still the bar is low, but like the important thing about this is that you could absolutely politic with this card. You can 100% like, if there is a threat on the table, you can talk to your opponents and be like, hey, I'm going to cast this. Can you please give me this card and I'll cast it to deal with our mutual threat? Maybe you could even bargain to get something else as well, too. It's kind of like when you cast Factor of Fiction. Like, Factor of Fiction's already a good card, right? Like, even if you're casting it normally, it's good. But so many times we've noticed in games where somebody's like, ah, yeah, 5-0 split. Like, you're not the threat, so I want to help you out a little bit. If you're behind, you cast Guided Passage, they're going to give you the best 3 cards in your freaking deck. Like, it's insane.
We can't really cast this on Clash, but it should be very fun.
Yeah, we can't cast on all account.
Yeah, that would be tough to actually resolve. I mean, I guess you could, right? I guess you'd just be like, look at my deck list and tell me 3 cards. Then, so I guess it wouldn't actually be as bad as it looks.
It might actually be easier because then they don't have to go through your deck and you just do it. Actually, never mind. Yeah, you could cast this on
Clash. Physical deck. Yeah, I send you my list.
My question for this is, how big of a downside? So the 3-mana draw 3, you got me sold on that because I think they're very powerful. We see Richard infamously secret rendezvousing where he has to give his opponents 3 cards and he'll still 3-mana draw 3. So we know that the bar for 3-mana draw 3s is pretty low. Like if you're drawing 3 cards for 3-mana, you're probably going to be good. I think the politics argument, pretty convincing. I could imagine being like, oh, we need a Wrath. I'll give you the Blasphemous Act as one of your cards. And then, yeah, maybe you're still getting a basic land or whatever for your land and not your Field of the Dead or something or whatever. But still, like, I could see getting good cards out of this. How big of a downside is revealing literally every card in your deck to the entire table? Is that a downside where you're like, they know all my tricks, they know what I'm trying to do, they know they need to exile my Cauldra piece or whatever? Like, is that a concern or not really?
I guess if you're trying to hide a combo from the table, then it's a severe downside. But like, Yeah. I think outside of that, like, I don't know, I'm playing Gisha, like, I don't know, I'm playing Animar or something, you know, like I have Eldrazi in there or something.
Yeah,
I don't
know. It's like, all it's what, like, you expect anyway.
Not a surprise.
What's the worst case? Like, if you don't, I like the politics angle, but you usually play good cards in your deck, right? It's always hard to cut a card.
I mean,
I guess
okay,
if you play Mana Dork, it sucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basic land, Mana Dork, Ponder or something is probably like your floor, right? Like your least powerful creature is probably a Mana Dork, least proper land, probably a basic, and then just like some cheap cantrip or maybe like a conditional removal spell, like an artifact removal when there's no important artifact or something. So that's probably the floor. Mm-hmm. But still, like, people land tax and you're getting literally three basic lands in your hand, and that's card advantage. So even if the cards aren't good, just the fact that you're getting three of them probably is enough.
Yeah.
You could also do, like, some sneaky deck building where if you only have, like, a couple of creatures in your deck and they're both really important or they're both combo pieces, then your opponent kind of has to give you one of those, right? Or maybe you only have a couple of spells in your deck. Like, you could try to manipulate your deck building. Yeah, you kind of could.
Yeah, I had three creatures and they're all bangers.
Yeah, good choice. Well, let's move on to the next one, and I gotta shout out one of my favorite cards, and I don't even know if this card's good. I just play it in a lot of decks because I love the gotcha moments that it creates, and that is Rakdos Charm. Rakdos Charm, a black and a red for an instant that says, choose one of exile target player's graveyard, so like a Tormod's Crypt instant speed, destroy target artifact, so like a Shatter instant speed, or the big mode, each creature deals one damage to its controller, which is a pretty unique effect for two mana instant speed. Like, it is a card that the baseline is pretty decent, where blowing up an artifact's fine. Sometimes the graveyard hate's really good. But there are situations where that just gets people so severely out of the blue, where you have someone who's popping off and having their big turn. I think of Phil Dex, where Phil has, what was that game where you were, like, copying that thing again and again that was, like, evolving, and you had, like, hundreds of them? Do you remember that game not that long ago?
The rat stack something.
Yeah. Something like Rakdos Charm is just like the perfect answer to that, where you just let them pop off and do their thing, and then you're just like, two mana, all your creatures deal damage to you, you die on the spot, and you kind of did it to yourself. Like, if you weren't popping off so hard, the Rakdos Charm wouldn't have got you. And we've had some really good, I remember like a Tom Commander Clash moment from like years ago where he got people with this on like Moto Commander Clash. We've had some really good moments with this card over the years. So I think it's worth playing in basically every deck because it's pretty good, but it leads to just some of the best moments when it works. And I think that's why I like playing Commander, is those moments. So I think it's worth putting those cards in your deck, even if you could play something slightly more powerful, just because people are going to remember like that moment years later, and they're not going to remember how your whatever, your Terminate was slightly more efficient or something when you killed their thing.
I think you nailed it. Like, this is a storytelling card. It's very memorable. I remember last week on Commander Nights, somebody was playing Rammos Lucky Charms, and he also killed somebody with a Rakdos Charm who was about to like have a lethal board state and stuff. It happens quite often. And especially if they're up against like lanes players or something, they love their scoot swarms. They love like, you know, filling the board with tokens and stuff. And it's very easy to get them with it. And then the other two modes are actually still good too. Like if somebody is doing some graveyard shenanigans, you can wipe their graveyard, or you can also blow up an artifact that's important too. So yeah, I think this card still holds up even over a decade later, and it's my favorite charm. It's my favorite charm of all time because it does make the limits. We still remember the Tom game from eight years ago.
And we're still talking about it.
Yeah. It's one of those cards where you hope the opponent doesn't have it, like settle the record. It's like, please don't tell me you have Rakdos Charm, and then when they have it. Oh my God.
What are you going to do? Like, not pop off to play around the potential of somebody having, I'm not going to do my thing because I might have Rakdos Charm. You just got to accept that sometimes it's going to happen to you.
I also love that it also gets around, like, some of the most common protection spells, like Clever's Concealment, Heroic Intervention and stuff. It still gets you. I mean, Teferi's Proven will still get around it, but, like,
Clever Concealment faces out your creatures.
Heroic Intervention.
It gets around any of the, like, your stuff's indestructible. Flawless Maneuver and whatnot.
But it's still quite good. I like it.
Yeah. Back to you, Phil. What else you got for us? It's multicolored.
All right. I'm just going to steal some from your list.
Go for it.
Okay. So here's a land that is It looks green, but it is five color, and it's an insane payoff for playing five color. And whenever I'm in five color, it's like the first land, the world tree, and then try to tutor it out, and then don't worry about your mana base. Mm-hmm. It is just a tapped green land. But as long as you have six or more lands, lands you control have tap at one mana of any color. And then very weird flavor text here with, I'm not even going to read this, unless you're in a god deck or changeling. Wait,
yeah.
I mean, you play this. If you play five color, you play this. So I guess Toma plays it in the new changeling deck.
I actually do.
Yeah. Have you activated it?
Maybe once in the span of like 4 years.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. It's still like just the baseline. It's mana fixing for a five color deck. It's so good.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this one is, it is five color. That's why it's a little weird, because like, yeah, if you're in five colors, it's whatever. But this is kind of the description of the podcast. It's like, if you're in these colors, you can finally put this card in your deck, and otherwise you can, but it would be good in three colors as well or something. It's just such an easy way to fix your mana. You can just crop rotation it or something.
And having all your lands tap for every color, like apart from fixing your mana, it's also nice, and I think Tomer has brought this up in the past when we were debating like Chromatic Lantern, but it kind of lessens your mental load a little bit too, right? Like you don't have to spend any of your finite brain power thinking about, am I tapping correctly? Or if I tap this, am I going to need it during my second main phase? Because everything taps for every color. You can just tap however you want. Like any land is going to do whatever you want. You can focus on like sequencing your turn or what your opponent's board state is instead of worrying about, oh no, did I mistap and like screw myself over? And I think there's actually like some value to that, and unlike Chromatic Lantern, this isn't a land slot, so the opportunity cost is even lower.
It also fixes a problem in five color, which is fetches not being able to fetch anymore. I guess if you have fetches and try, like fetches tap for mana now, so at some point you don't need to risk getting blown out by your own fetches, and you can just say, I might play this fetch and I tap it for whatever.
Where y'all don't run Abu Dhul's?
I mean, yeah. what about lands that don't make mana? If you're playing this, are you more likely to play like a Maze of Ith or something? Because you're going to be like,
five color.
Yeah, I'm going to be able to make mana with it eventually, so I can get away with like playing something like that.
If I'm five color lands, yes. But I mean, you got to have those two to us.
I almost don't count Maze of Ith as like a proper lane slot, though. Like if I have like 40 lands, if I want Maze of Ith, I usually put it as 41.
You cut a
because
spell,
it's like,
and yeah.
You never want to play like Maze of Ith as your land drop from like the first five turns of the game, I think, right? Like,
yeah.
It feels so icky. It's like, ugh, my turn two land. No, my turn three land is a Maze of Ith, and then I can't cast a three drop. Ugh.
I think it does keep getting better. The more like Yavmayas we get, we got World Tree, we got Urborg, stuff like that does make it a little easier to play those cards. But
yeah,
play it in every five color deck. It's totally worth it. Anyway, Tomer, what do you got for us?
Okay, so this is a Simic card, but it's only good if you're at least four color, and I would say five color is the ideal. It's Bring to Light. It's three green and blue. It's a sorcery, and it has Converge. It's a search your library for a creature, instant, or sorcery card with mana value less than or equal to the number of colors of mana spent to cast a spell. Exile that card, then shuffle. You may cast that card without paying its mana cost. So if you spent two different colors of mana on this, you can only get a two drop, two or less. That's a creature, instant, or sorcery. But if you pay five mana, then you just get a five drop and you immediately get to cast it. And that makes it one of the most efficient tutors in the format, where like if you want a five drop and you spend five mana on it, then like it's essentially like tutoring it to your hand and immediately casting it for free, which is kind of ridiculous. And it's pretty flexible. Like it can't get anything like a demonic tutor, but a creature, instant, or sorcery that usually at least any deck, a five color deck, should have at least a couple options there that you always want to find at some point. Usually it's like a board wipe, I would say, like you get like a five drop board wipe or something like that. But if you don't need a board wipe, you get like a five drop equivalent card draw or whatever. So it's super, super flexible and potentially very, very mana efficient. So I really like it in like four color, five color decks. I guess you could do like a four color deck. And then if you're like Taliad, You can get like a 5-drop still in your 4-color deck. Oh, and you have to pay the main attacks. Does that work? Yeah.
It should work, right? Because you can make mana outside your color identity now.
Yes. So. Yeah, I feel like a Chromatic Lantern. Ooh.
Yeah, if you got to have a
treasure.
I mean, I think for me, I probably got to be 5-color. I don't know. I guess I just don't play 4-color decks. So maybe I played in 4-color. 4-color decks are so rare that they rarely actually come up. But I feel like any 5-color deck, or almost any 5-color deck, is going to be able to take advantage of it. Just like you said, like, if you need a Wrath, it's a Wrath. If you need a Threat, it's a Threat. If you need card draw, it's card draw. It's doing that, and it's just doing it so efficiently because you get to play the thing for free.
I always forget it exists. It should be cool.
Well, I will match you, Bring to Light, Tomber, because I have another card that kind of does the same thing, and I also always forget, and I think you should probably play it in, like, pretty much any deck, but it's a Bant card, so you can play it in slightly more decks, and that card is Wargate. So Wargate, it is Bant and X for a sorcery that says, search your library for a permanent card with converted mana cost of X or less, put it into play, and then shuffle your library. So unlike Bring to Light, if you want to put a 5-drop in, well, first off, it only gets permanent. So you can get artifacts, enchantments, creatures. You can't get spells. So you can't get instants or sorceries. You can get lands with it, which is a huge deal. But a little bit less efficient. If you want a 5-drop, you're going to have to spend 8 mana. But the power of Wargate is its baseline is so good, which is 3 mana, ramp your best non-basic land, which is already great, right? We were talking about getting the World Tree, or like some decks, you really need the Cabal Coffers, or you need the Yavmaya because you built the Richard mana base and you got all colorless lands and you can't cast yourself. But this just gives whatever non-basic land you need for 3 mana. And then it just scales throughout the game. In the late game, when you got a ton of mana, it gets your Crater Hoof or it gets whatever you're planning on using to close out the game. And Wargate's a card that I forget. I think it's mostly that I don't play Bant that often. And then if I play it a Bant deck, I sometimes just forget that it exists. But I think this card should be played in basically any Bant deck. And I think most 5-color decks too. But Tomer, I know you had this one on your list. What do you think of Wargate?
I love this card. I also forget it all the time too, just like you. But the last time I was having it in my decks, I had it in my Changeling deck because for 3 mana, like you said, the first thing I would get is Wargate. So, or not not the first thing I would get is the World Tree. That's what I meant. I get the World Tree with it for 3 mana, and then boom, my mana is fixed, and I can continue the game. And then if I have 6 mana, one cool little tech that it could pull off is I can get Hakan Stromgald Scourge into play. Hakan is this like really powerful zombie payoff or knight payoff where you can cast knight spells from your graveyard as long as it's on the battlefield. However, you could only cast Hakan from the graveyard but nowhere else, which makes it kind of awkward to get him into play sometimes. And then Wargate, you could just put him into play because you're not casting the spell. You're just putting the permanent onto the battlefield. So it was a cute little way of getting Hakan onto the battlefield, but also like having all this flexibility. Usually World Tree, then Hakan, and then if I have more mana, something else. That's very fun.
I really like the land ramp. I always forget about it, and I'm thinking about it is just a tutor. Maybe I put it in one of my decks. Just getting a land, just a bounce land, and then you, like, if you're missing land drops, and then you do this into bounce land, and then you hit your land drop as well.
Yeah, it's pretty good in 4-color Omnath, I would say.
I feel like this is enough, but the Brewing Chef, maybe, and I can tutor it. More value.
You can find Caretaker's talent with this.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you can get the Caretaker's talent. That is true. Yeah, I mean, the card, I think it's just the most efficient way to get a non-basic land in the colors, right? Like, 3 mana ramp any non-basic land is still a pretty rare effect. Like, that was part of what I was hyped about, Archduke's Charm, yeah. But then you're triple green, so if you're in Bant, I think you'd rather be Wargate. But yeah, the card's still very efficient. Well, all right, let's do one last round here. Phil, back to you for your final multicolor pick.
Okay, so my last pick, it's another Sibic card. It is another just generically good card that I do play a bunch, though. It is Oko, Thief of Crowns. It's my excuse for, hey, I play removal. Look, it's Oko. it's a planeswalker. I don't know if people are still traumatized from this, probably. 3 mana, it turns stuff into Alex. It turns commanders into Alex, which is incredibly oppressive. And then it pluses up very easily to a point where people don't care anymore and say, well, yeah, we just got an Orko and it's brutal. And I got it out of my decks that are a little on the chiller side. Although now that I think about it, it's probably, it makes tokens. Maybe I should put it into my brain.
Caretaker's talent.
Yeah.
Put in your all decks.
Yeah.
All of them. This card is...
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Tomer.
I just want to say it's so funny that like we've always said planeswalkers are so bad in multiplayer because it's like they're slow, you have to protect against multiple people, but like Orko is like this exception where it's so busted, it's so strong, its loyalty count is so high that it actually
is $3
good.
At this point. It's actually cheap.
This is banned everywhere.
Yeah.
And like its baseline is essentially like a sorcery speed beast within almost. So like even if your opponents just attack it down and kill it, like you don't feel that bad that you got rid of the best thing. You know, you elk the best creature at the table or artifact on the table for 3 mana. So I think that's part of the power too, is unlike a lot of other planeswalkers, even if it doesn't stick around for multiple turns, you still feel like you got your money's worth out of Orko. But I'm curious, is this card a salty card? Like does the 60 card hate carry over? Because for some reason Orko doesn't really upset me in Commander. If you're dropping Orko against me in Commander, I'm not gonna look you side-eyed or whatever. But I'm curious, like, is this considered to be a salty card in Commander?
Hey Seth, do you care about your Commander turning into a 3/3 Orko with no abilities?
Maybe it's because I don't cast my Commander. Yeah, so I don't care. I don't care. Yeah,
Phil, if you would prefer your Marnius Khalgar to have no abilities,
I'd say it's salty. I admit it. It is very salty.
It's like Deadpool. Yeah. Well, it's not as bad as Deadpool, but it is like the similar thing.
I don't know.
Similar.
Every turn you can plus one and turn something into an Elec. It might be saltier than Deadpool.
At least you can have hexproof.
That's the target, yeah.
At least you can have hexproof.
Yeah, Orko, I think you can play in actually any deck, and it's going to be worth it. Like, from a wins and loss perspective, I think it makes pretty much any deck better.
I mean, I usually don't play it on Clash because it kind of is bad for content. If you play, like, your commander and say, it's an Elec. That's not what people want to say. See, and
I want to see it.
No. It's kind of like kind of similar to Deadpool in that way, right? Where like if everyone's things are just elks instead of like what their deck is trying to do, no one's deck really does the thing because they're all just elks instead. Although,
oh my god,
maybe that's the funny part of it. I remember I don't know if you remember the like Eternal Weekend or whatever, where they're like someone won by like turning their Black Lotus into an elk and beating down, and that's like still a thing that I remember. So it does lead to some funny moments too.
I had an idea. Tell me in the comments section if you want to watch it. We play Commander, but everybody's playing Orko in the command zone.
Oh.
Yes.
Orko,
I want to see
Deadpool
this for some reason. Maybe it's the meds, but I think this is the best idea ever.
It's still funny to me. So when they released Brawl, the standard Commander 1v1 variant, they said, oh, Planeswalkers can be your commander. And then in the same set, they have Orko, which invalidates the entire format if it's your commander.
They didn't ban it as commander?
Oh, it was immediately banned. But it was banned everywhere. So,
yeah.
Including Brawl.
Yeah, that card is over the top. Oh, well, Tomer, what do you got for your final pick?
Okay, I had a very enlightened one, but I don't think you guys are ready for it. Instead, I'm going to talk about one that's actually just a crowd pleaser, but I think everybody has collectively forgotten about this card. It's Riveteer's Charm. It's also a charm. Ooh. This is the Jund Charm. So black, red, green, 3 mana, instant. Choose one. The modes are mode number one, target opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker they control with the greatest mana value among creatures and planeswalkers they control. Mode number two, exile the top 3 cards of your library until your next end step. You may play those cards. And mode number 3, exile target player's graveyard. I think all 3 modes are pretty darn good. The standout, though, is that second mode where you get to impulse draw 3 cards. So if you do this on not your turn, when it comes to your turn, you have a full turn cycle, all your mana, to cast those 3 cards. So it's almost like an instant speed draw 3. And then it has 2 other modes that are just useful a lot of times. Like if your opponents have a threat that must be answered, usually it's the highest mana value one, right? Like if they're swinging a big thing at you, the scary thing you want to kill is usually the highest mana value one. So that, the instant speed removal for that. And then sometimes there's like graveyard shenanigans and you have to pop the graveyard if somebody's doing like mass reanimation or something like that. So I think all modes are good, but I think just like the thing that carries it for me is like 3 mana instant speed draw 3, and then the other two are just bonus. It's like nice, I think.
Yeah.
I think the edict is the one you want, like the one you use most of the time, right?
Yeah.
Like if you keep it up, it's probably like, yeah, I wish I could draw two cards, but I gotta survive here. And I think
you hold it up because you don't want to die. And then if you don't need to use it, then you just like draw 3.
I mean, that's the power of the card, right? Because it's like the Ink Shield problem is solved. Because the reason I'm skeptical of Ink Shield is like, I might waste 5 mana if I don't get a good time to cast it. But with Riveteer's Charm, you leave it up for removal, and then you can draw 3 cards if you don't have to, which I think makes it really powerful. Plus, the other thing I would say, I think you're right that this card should be played more. I was looking at an EDH rec, and it's not really that heavily played there either. It's not like even in like Jund decks, it's not like people play it as a staple in every deck. But I think it keeps getting better because we keep getting more and more play from exile mechanics. That's something, and just like, like the last, that was a thing that didn't exist for like the first 25 years of Magic. And now in just the last few years, we've gotten so many commanders and cards that like when you play something from anywhere but your hand, when you play something from exile, I trigger and I do something. So I think this card just keeps getting better and better too, because Impulse Draw keeps getting better and better with all these payoffs for playing from exile.
I just think Capenna is like a black hole in terms of everybody's collective knowledge. Yeah. Like, I don't know why, but for some reason that set does not stick in my brain or other people's brains. So every single time I'm like, wow, this new card looks so good. It's like, no, it came out 6 years ago or something like that.
There's so many good cards from Capenna. That set too, that every time a random card comes up, it's like, oh, from Capenna Commander or whatever. Like, oh my God, I probably should look through this set, because apparently that set was super busted and no one realized it. All right, let's go to our last pick. And I'm going to wind things up today. Man, so many options. I have so many cards on my list. I guess I'm just going to go with the card that I actually think that you should play in every deck, even though it's a card that I know I've mentioned before on like a sleeper podcast or something, but really play this card. And it's Binding the Old Gods. It's a 3-mana Golgari Saga. First lore counter, you blow up a non-land permanent an opponent control, so any non-land permanent. Second lore counter, you grab a forest from your deck, any forest, so it can be a surveil land or whatever, put it into play tap. Last lore counter, doesn't matter, gives your creatures death touch, doesn't really count. But 4 mana, blow up the best thing on the battlefield, ramp your best forest out of your deck. It's just a really, really powerful effect, and I think that you should play this, and basically, if you're playing casual, I guess if you're playing like super high powered and you got all the fast mana, you don't really need this effect as much. But if you're playing a casual deck, I think that this isn't really like a saga card or an enchantress card. I think it's just like a really good Golgari card, and I would play it in 3-color decks, and I would even consider in 5-color decks, because the way I build my mana bases in 5-color decks is going to be a bunch of fetch lands, a bunch of shock lands, a bunch of surveillance or triomes, and this just gets all those. Even if I'm playing very few basics, I can grab my triome or the surveillance when I need it. So I actually think the combination of removal and like mid-game ramp makes Binding the Old Gods just a really, really strong multicolor card. But where are you guys at with this one?
You already convinced me.
Yeah.
In another podcast.
So good.
Was it Sleepers? But it is, I don't know. I run into it a lot on Arena, but I never thought about playing it in Commander, but it is. It is removal that I would play because it also ramps.
So you can trick yourself into playing more removal. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's flexible. Like any non-land permanent, there's always going to be something to remove. And you just play on curve. You just find an excuse to blow something up. And you're like, I'm sorry, that
usually,
thing's out of control.
Yeah,
and
do it.
Meanwhile, you just want to ramp a little bit too. And like sometimes you have a trample creature and the death touch is actually good, but it's very rare.
It's
also
rare.
A permanent, so you can flicker it, you can get it back with Eerie Ultimatum.
Yeah, it's just so much synergy potential. Obviously, if you're an Enchantress, I think this is one of the first sagas you should go for.
It's but also like, crazy with the Scholar of the UHs.
Oh, because you
get one that removes
counters.
I mean, if you're an Absan, and then you have Eerie Ultimatum to get both back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And 25 cents, so super cheap too. If you're working on a budget, it's a super cheap one. So I think we've had some good, like, not only good multicolor picks, but I think we've had some good budget picks. I'm just looking at the prices of these cards, and a lot of the cards we talked about today are 25 cents, 50 cents, even Doppelgangs, 53 cents.
I'm
like,
surprised.
Yeah,
Doppelgang's so cheap. I thought it would be like pretty expensive because it's like a very cool effect.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, maybe give it time, but yeah, it's definitely not there. It's definitely not there yet. But anyway, I think that brings us to the end of our multicolor cards that are good in every deck you can play them in. So if you got a favorite multicolor deck or multicolor card, let us know in the comments, and we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is a crew signing out.